AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Breaking news, a letter is just released by President Biden's physician who confirms that the neurological specialist and Parkinson's expert who has visited the White House dozens of times since 2012 is the doc who examined Mr. Biden for each of his annual physicals. He says results of each physical were made public each time and no signs of Parkinson's has been found. With over 2 million power outages in southeast Texas caused by Hurricane Beryl, utility crews are on the way, says Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo.
I'm told there will be boots on the ground. These 7,000 crews will be here in the region working on our lines, working on our poles, and working to do as much as possible to address the power issue.
Beryl's now a weaker depression moving north. The UN Security Council is to meet tomorrow about today's deadly Russian missile attack on a Ukrainian children's hospital. This is ABC News.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WMDX website at mad.radio.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Eau Claire parents are asking the Supreme Court for permission to sue their school district over a gender support policy. The district policy says staff should respect the student's chosen gender and doesn't need to notify parents. Parents say that violates their constitutional rights. The case has already been dismissed twice from lower courts for lack of standing. A lot of farm workers do their jobs outside in extreme heat in the summer. The Biden administration wants to guarantee them mandatory rest breaks, shade, and clean drinking water. Samantha Guerrero is a community organizer who says it's high time.
There are a lot of farm workers who are in danger of losing their lives in these extreme temperatures, and so far we have seen no urgency to enact or create any protection.
479 American workers died from heat exposure between 2011 and 2022. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
You know Ignite Glass and Gifts' three locations in Madison, but you can also shop igniteglassandgifts.com. You'll find grinders, lighters, collectibles, hand-blown glass water pipes, artistically designed jewelry, and plenty of other items delivered straight to your door or to family and friends. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts, Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and O'Dana Road. Plus, igniteglassandgifts.com.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, Madison's home for the Todd Lobel Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Hope everyone had a safe, healthy, happy 4th of July. Hope all your fingers, your toes, your belly, your nose, your head, hope everything in place. Hopefully you didn't do anything stupid, and you're okay today. That's what I'm hoping for. Here's the thing. Had an interesting weekend myself. Hot. Spent part of the day on Sunday reading in the house. Hot. and came across, a little bit. And look, I'm usually somebody, up on what happened today in labor history. After all, we do our little thing, labor history, in two. And yesterday I was reminded of the March of the Mill Children. And, and so I went and I started reading some of Mother Jones's autobiography. For those who don't know, the March of the Mill Children was organized by Mother Jones, Mary Harris, in Philadelphia, a march from Philadelphia to Oyster Bay, New York, where then President Teddy Roosevelt was vacationing at his home with Prince Peter, as I understand it. About 100 kids made the march all the way from Philly to New York. About 100 miles they marched. And all along the way, of course, getting, publicity and trying to gather up, some, hey, what's going on? so that the local press would cover stuff, so that the, because they would have to, because, hey, I saw this big procession. What happened? Couldn't be ignored. And, you know, the idea to draw attention, you know, they carried banners and signs. And look, when you see about 100 kids marching down the street, you know, missing hands and, you know, fingers and eyes and all kinds of stuff, kind of raises attention. So it was, Sunday was the 121st anniversary of the march. And so I started reading a little bit of Mother Jones' autobiography about the March of the Mill Children. And it's online, it's free, you can Google it. But, you know, I decided today I'm just going to read the opening of that bit, where she writes, "In the spring of 1903, I went to Kensington, Pennsylvania, where 75,000 textile workers were on strike." She says, "Of this number, at least 10,000 were little children. The workers were striking for more pay and shorter hours. Every day, little children came to the union headquarters, some with their hands off, some with their thumbs missing, some with their fingers off at the knuckle. They were stooped little things, round-shouldered and skinny. Many of them were not over 10 years of age, although the state law prohibited working before they were 12. She says, look, the law was poorly enforced, and the mothers of these children often swore falsely as to their children's age. In a single block in Kensington, 14 women, mothers of 22 children under the age of 12, explained it was a question of starvation or perjury. The fathers had been killed or maimed in the mines. And we've talked about this before. The old company towns, when the husband gets killed, somebody's got to fill the spot, or mama's got to do some favors, or you got to get out. She writes, "I asked the newspaper men, why didn't they publish the facts about child labor in Pennsylvania? They said they couldn't because the mill owners had stock in the papers." And she said, "Well, I've got stock in these little children, and I'll arrange a little publicity." And that she did 121 years ago. And look, you know, her famous speech, the wail of the children. One of those things that we don't see enough of today, and we don't have a media structure that will even bring it up. And even though it was 121 years ago, the history of that march, the history of that should resonate profoundly with our present struggles for justice, for humanity, for human rights. You know, the early 20th century, amidst the clang of machinery and the cries of exploited children, there was a fearless woman, Mother Jones, Mary Harris, who stood up as the beacon for hope of the oppressed. And look, in the shadows of the Industrial Revolution, she led this march against a horrid exploitation of children in factories and mines. And here we are in this moment. There are states undoing child labor laws. But, you know, what I read about her, and as I was reading, this is a woman who had fiery determination. You didn't care if she got arrested. In fact, you know, one of the famous quotes I remember from a speech she gave outside of Pittsburgh was, you know, when the company sends in their spies, have them come to the front of the line so they can report my words accurately. But she had the courage to rally these young souls to demand an end to the inhumane conditions that they worked in. This is a pivotal moment in American history. This is a pivotal moment in the fight for labor rights. This is a pivotal moment in the fight for justice. And understand, while the strike at Kensington was lost, they didn't get the higher pay or the shorter hours. The state of Pennsylvania, the General Assembly, did pass a law banning children from working until their 14th birthday, with some enforcement. So again, you fast forward to today, present day, right now, we find ourselves facing the disheartening reality that there is a resurgence of attacks on child labor laws. Despite the hard-fought victories of the past, Mother Jones here the rights and the protections of our most vulnerable, our children, are once again under attack. And why? Same reasons back then. Cheap labor. Exploitable labor. You know, the greed and indifference of the past. Not much different than today. Now, here's the thing. I have people say, well, you know, couldn't happen here. You know, they're just loosening things a little bit. It could never go back. We're better than they were 121 years ago. And I don't know. I'm not there yet because I got to tell you, it looks like we're reliving history. I have been getting a lot of email. The situation that we are in this country is dire. Because one election, a lot of the things that we fought for, that our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents fought, bled, and died for, will be on the line. And as I said, I've been getting slammed with angry emails. And in my mind, the argument that I've been making back is going, look, if you think Biden's capable of doing the job, if you want him to do the job and you think this is it, I fully understand. It's a valid argument. But if you're like me who going, you know, I trust Joe Biden. I believe wholeheartedly he's going to do what's in the best interest of the country. And I think that should be to step aside, especially after what we saw on Thursday at the Thursday debate. That, too, is a valid argument. It's a valid discussion to have. Now, our media elites, they're behaving exactly how they're supposed to. Because much like the reason the newspaper people 121 years ago didn't talk about child labor, same today. It's about the profits. It's about the corporate interests. It's about them, not us. Do you really think the people who were, I would argue, yesterday's lunch money victims are going to be the ones to stand up for democracy today? They're not going to stand up to their bosses. They've got cushy gigs making millions of dollars. And I get the other thing. Well, why haven't you asked for Donald Trump to step aside? There's a bunch of reasons for that. Should Donald Trump step aside? Absolutely, without question. He should have resigned or stepped aside a long time ago. In the best interest of the country, he should step aside. But here's the thing. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about us. He doesn't care about this country. He cares about him. And the idea that somehow, if we just said enough, Donald, you got to go, that he would go, oh, okay. Now, here's the thing. I think Joe Biden is a good, decent, honest, thoughtful man. I also think that Democrats are not a bunch of goose-stepping morons who blindly follow dear leader. Understand, there is no world in which I see a Donald Trump or any of the Republicans in this moment doing the right thing. Now, I've been hammered by some of the red hat crowd for saying, well, you know, you said you'd vote for him even if he was in a coma. This is true, because Donald Trump is a clear and present danger to this country. And I wholeheartedly believe this. But I've said I'm all in favor of the policies. It's the team that the administration. It's everything that comes with Joe Biden. And again, my red hat crowd used to believe this, because after the embarrassment that was Helsinki, everyone was going, well, you know, I don't really like Donald Trump. I don't think he's really that good, but I like his policies. And then you would ask, well, what policy is that, pray tell? And, well, didn't have an answer. I've got hundreds of answers to the things that I've agreed with this administration in writing the course of our country. Of supporting workers by encouraging people to join and form unions, by investing in our infrastructure here at home, by investing in reshoring manufacturing. You know, there's the talk about country first. There's the talk about America first that we hear from the right. And that's usually some kind of weird Eurocentric white nationalist rhetoric. What Joe Biden's talking about is really, truly country first. And ensuring that everyone here has an opportunity. regardless of your background, regardless of your ethnicity, regardless of your race or sex or any of that. Now, our corporate-controlled media needs this. They need the horse race. And I would argue that we as a country need this. And I do believe my position is where we should be going. And I'm fully anticipating the week of the Republican convention, you're going to see a move. Because you're seeing big voices. A number of House Democrats have called on the president to step aside. A number of senators have come out. You've got Dan Pfeiffer, Obama's guy, saying that Biden doesn't seem to see the crisis. And you've got David Axelrod, again, another Obama strategist, saying that Biden's headed towards a landslide defeat. All the voices in his circle are raising concerns. That's telling me that there's going to be a move. Now, I do get, he's out there doing rallies, and that's great. I think he has to. He has to promote the agenda, absolutely. But at some point, we're going to have to find out. Now, will that be the convention? We'll see. Here's the bottom line. I think it would be in the best interest of his legacy. I think it would be in the best interest of the country. And we'll see. But if he decides that he believes in his heart that he is the best person to not allow Donald Trump to get back in the White House, I will full force, full-throated, actively help him in any way I can. Because again, one, it's about the agenda. It's about the policies that they've moved and wanting to do what they've accomplished and more. And also, it's about keeping the other guy out. And there's a bunch of reasons why we need to keep this generation of Republicans out of power. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, a funny tweet I saw over the weekend. Marjorie Trainwreck Greene tweeted out, the average age of the signers of the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776, was 44 years old. But more than a dozen were 35 or younger. And then she points out that Thomas Jefferson was 33, John Hancock was 39, James Madison was 25, Alexander Hamilton was 21, James Monroe was 18, Aaron Burr was 20, Paul Revere was 41, and she goes on down this list. George Washington, all these names. Somebody going to tell her? Never mind. Never mind. Hamilton, Monroe, Burr, Paul Revere, George Washington. none of them signed the Declaration of Independence. But hey, you know, these are the people who want to destroy the Department of Education. These are the people who say, no, we don't need such a thing. Yeah. Also on the social medias, Donald Trump on his Truth. Again, brilliant marketing to start everything that you're going to say that you believe is ridiculous, is nonsense, is propaganda, is a bold-faced lie. Starting off with it's on Truth Social, is you got to give them credit for really, you know, understanding marketing. But Trump put out on his thing, and oddly enough, not in all caps, which tells me, I don't know that he wrote it, but the former president wrote out, I know nothing about Project 2025. Duh? He said, I have no idea who's behind it. Really? I disagree with some of the things they're saying, and some of the things they're saying are absolutely ridiculous and abysmal. Anything they do, I wish them luck, but I have nothing to do with them. And the weird thing is, well, one of his main advisors, Stephen Miller, is evidently all over it, but has come out and said, I've never done any work with them, except on their YouTube channel. And again, this is that world where they do something, they get caught, they deny it, and then our media just lets it go. Because then I'm guilty of this as well, because they lie about everything. This is a gang that I fear would lie when the truth would be better. That these kind of things are basically their MO. Now, understand, Project 2025 has finally been getting some attention. We've been talking about it for months now. You know, the first week it came out, we were saying, uh-oh, bad. This is going to make, they're attempting to do what Jim Jordan and his crowd accuse the Democrats of. And that is actually weaponizing government, making patronage great again. Because understand, one of the things that Trump really, really whines about a lot is that the bureaucracy didn't let him, you know, steer the ship, you know, immediately. You had to go through a process. And that's the point of our government, especially, you know, some of these bureaucracies that are put into place so that you don't make wide swings from one ideological extreme to the other, that there's some consistency. What they want to be able to do is they want to bring in all political appointees. And are these people qualified? Nah, I would doubt it. They're yes people. They're going to do what they're told, whatever dear leader says. Because interestingly enough, because when it first came out, I was looking at, you know, how, because I wanted to apply. Hello, put me up, sign me up. But then they wanted all your social media stuff and, you know, all of your personal information that no job application should ever ask for, because they wanted to see, you know, if you were sufficiently loyal. If you've ever said anything bad about dear leader, you're out. So, you know, again, finally getting some attention about this Project 2025 and how dangerous it could be. Because imagine if you could, every election cycle, replace the entire federal government, not just the heads, not just the people who are deciding the direction of the organization, but, you know, the person who's answering the phones, the person who's, you know, putting the, you know, filing, you know, the paperwork, every person in the entire organization is absolutely loyal and fearful that at any minute they're going to be thrown to the wolves. Because if there's one thing we've learned about Donald Trump and how he deals with things is that, you know, one screw up, you're under the bus. And which is why, again, you know, what was it, 40 of his 44 cabinet members, you know, the very best people, that's a huge number, 40 out of 44 refuse to endorse him. And a lot of the things that they said are, well, not very flattering. So now this thing that Trump believes, that, or he has claimed, or somebody claims, because again, I don't believe that Trump actually wrote that, because there are no caps. Well, there is a cap where they're supposed to be. I guess the question comes back to, do you believe it? Because what Project 2025 would have done, or and if they get the chance, they're going to do, is they're going to, you know, go in, fire all the federal workers, and then replace them with loyalists to move an agenda that the conservatives have really been organizing around. And you do have to give them credit. You have to give the moneyed interest credit for having the staying power for over 50 years while the Heritage Foundation and other groups have been in existence of pushing this agenda, which we're going to suffer under for the next, I don't know, couple generations. We are in a moment of transition and not in a good way. If Biden or whoever the Democrat is loses in November, we are going to see this country dramatically shift from the country that we have been. And what's interesting to me is that the very people who say how much they love our country, how much they love them and they're patriotic, but we got to change everything about it. Yes, I love America, but I hate everything about it. I hate the people. I hate the laws. I hate everything. We're going to fundamentally change it. And what is that going to look like? Well, they've been honest with us. You have to give them credit. They've been honest and telegraphed every pitch. We're just not smart enough to hit the ball when it comes. This will be a white male Christian-centric country. That's going to be the goal. The original intentists have already told us. Back to the original words of the Constitution. Which means we're going to be counting people as 3/5 for representative purposes. No blacks voting, no women voting. They're already talking about this stuff. And it's not like I'm trying to be hyperbolic. It's not like I'm trying to create this. Oh, this is what they're telling us. The question is, will we listen? They're telling us they want our legal system based basically on the Ten Commandments. As I've been saying for a couple of years, a Christian version of Sharia law. This is not me just making stuff up. This is what they're telling us. This is what they want. Workers, you're screwed. And here's the thing. Even if Biden wins, I think things get really ugly for working people. Because look, he's got a great person, an amazing person at the NLRB. Got an incredible person at the Department of Labor. If the Supreme Court rules the National Labor Relations Act after 1938, how many years is that? After all these years, if they rule that unconstitutional, it will throw our system into chaos, which is where they want it. And do you think Congress? Do you think a Senate that needs to get through cloture is going to pass anything to help working people? No. Understand, when they talk about less intrusive government, let the market decide, what they're really saying is let the rich people decide. Just like 121 years ago, when we were using children in mills and mines, and we were allowing the things to happen in our society because, well, we hadn't figured out yet how to not divide ourselves. And as I said earlier, I'm taking a lot of heat. And I'm not sure. I got to be honest. I'm surprised, quite frankly, at the number of people who are, really vocal Biden supporters. I haven't heard from you before. So I'm glad you're there. And I hope that you'll be there when whatever happens so that we can pick whatever is left and move it forward and get it past the goal line. But, wow. So we're in an interesting moment. The Supreme Court's told us that there's no such thing as stare decisis. There are no decided laws. So bet your bottom dollar that we will be repealing everything that we've taken for granted, that generations have fought for. There's talk of same-sex marriage going by the wayside. Even whispers of interracial. I mean, we're really talking about repealing the 20th century. 10 years ago when I said, they want to repeal Roe versus Wade and then eventually Griswold, I had people telling me I'm crazy, could never happen, not here. Yet here we are. when I said, you know, 15 years ago, there's a fascist movement in this country that wants to take everything over and repeal the 20th century. Not here. Here we are. We're in a moment where one election, and I don't even know, as I said the other day, that we can have a free and fair election. The way things are gerrymandered, the way states have rigged things, I'm not even sure, to be honest. But what I do know that we have to get active. When this fight ends, we have to unite around saving democracy, saving the fundamentals of what we believe this country to be. A place where you have the ability to pursue life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, where you have the right to exist without fear, without reprisal. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we get back, Bill Scheer is going to be here from the Washington Monthly to talk about his most recent piece. You're not going to want to miss that. Back after this.
Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy skies and light winds for the overnight. By daybreak, temperatures in the lower 60s. On Tuesday, still plenty of clouds, highs in the lower 80s. Tuesday night, those clouds stick around mid-60s. A chance of showers and storms Wednesday. Right now, it's 73.
Are your taste buds bored? Awaken those tired senses with a culinary treat at La Pollera Colombiana in Madison. La Pollera Colombiana's delicious, authentic cuisine is like taking a food journey through Colombia. There's a dance of flavors in every bite. Open Sunday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 9 a.m. till midnight. La Pollera Colombiana, 3579 East Washington Avenue in Madison. Your taste buds will thank you. La Pollera Colombiana.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I woke up today and deliberately, and I don't do this often, deliberately consumed some right-wing radio. Some of the crazy outrage candy of the morning. Got a little of that. Got a little of the F channel. Decided to check out what kind of lunacy is over there. And then said, you know what, maybe not far enough. Actually delved into some of the real crazy cable fringe kind of stuff. And interestingly enough, not one of them, at least I didn't see it, not one of them talked about Joe Biden using his new powers, you know, to take out Trump or to jail journalists or, you know, just the crime in general. Not one of them seemed to be all that worried that Joe Biden was going to use these new superpowers. Now, my email box, my friends on the left, not so with Donald Trump and even my right-wing friends. Some of them are going, well, he might abuse it. He may. And here to share some thoughts on, you know, what this recent decision by our Supreme Court, by the nine in robes have come up with. I've asked Devin Ombres to come talk with us. Devin is a senior director for courts and legal policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Devin, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be here. Wish it could be under better circumstances.
So, you know, am I being hyperbolic and going, hey, you know, I wanted to wake up and see if the right was going, you know, Joe Biden's now going to take, he's going to use these new powers and he's going to go on a crime spree. Because look, if you listen to him up until this point, you know, Joe Biden's this great mastermind criminal, him and the son, but didn't hear that today.
No, it's weird how that happens. And the fact that Joe Biden is a good and decent human being and a great public servant, he actually went on TV last night and said, even though the Supreme Court gave me all these new powers, I'm not going to abuse them. Unlike the other guy, because if past is prologue, then somebody who's already been convicted of 34 felony counts, facing 88 other felony counts, has been found to have been credibly accused of raping someone, whose charity has been completely demolished because it was committing fraud, that person might be slightly more scary than somebody who has been a public servant for 50 years.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, my right-wing friends all came out and said, this is what you Democrats always do. This is what you liberals always do. You know, the Supreme Court does something you don't like. All of a sudden, it's the sky's falling. They're evil. Is this decision that came out on Monday that does now give immunity to presidents from this day going forward? Is this what we're afraid of? I should put it this way. Could this be what we're afraid of?
This could be what we are afraid of. Core constitutional powers of a president are now immune, full stop. Any other power that he can exercise as president gets a presumption of immunity, which means that any prosecutor after the fact has to overcome a lot of hurdles to show that they were engaging in criminal activity and that prosecuting them for it wouldn't hinder the ability of a president to exercise their powers, which means effectively that he can do whatever he wants. And if we're talking core constitutional powers, selling pardons, sure, why not? Seeking bribes for vetoes or the enactment of executive orders, sure, why not? That's absolutely immune. If he wants to direct people under him to commit crimes and then offer them pardons, that falls within a presumptive immunity. There's very little that a president with these authorities could not do. And, you know, July 2nd, two days before we celebrate our 248th birthday, where we got rid of the divine right of kings, the Supreme Court just decided that whole Declaration of Independence, no, that doesn't jibe with us.
But what do you say to the person, Devin, who goes, you know, all the things that you just enumerated, you know, the selling of pardons, the, you know, the vetoes that seem to be politically motivated, you know, people believe that's already happening, you know, because I, you know, on both sides of the aisle, people believe that, you know, you can sell off pardons and there's a quid pro quo there. Those could be prosecuted before?
Pardons could never be prosecuted, but now you can just be open about it. I think you look back in time in our lifetime, the biggest pardon scandal that occurred was Bill Clinton pardoning Mark Rich,
yeah,
at the end of his term. I'm young enough that I don't remember the intricacies of it. I just remember that it was a big deal, but it really hasn't been a thing. But at this point in time, Trump could literally say, Steve Bannon, January Sixers, I'm going to pardon you. And it's in with his prerogative, but also I want to enlist your help to go do things. So the quid pro quo is very much on the table. But the other thing that I think people need to think about if they think it's happening on both sides is, you know, educate yourself a little bit, because if you listen to right-wing radio, good Lord, we're a bunch of child-eating pedophiles. But the evidence is never there. It's conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory with zero facts to back it up. And unfortunately, we live in a fact-based society, which is unfortunately part of what seems to be splintering the country. One side decides, I know better. I did my own research.
Yeah.
And everybody else is like, no, here's facts. I'm going to trust experts.
Yeah, I'm glad you hit that, because, you know, one of the things that came out of the pandemic that's driven me nuts is that phrase, you know, do your own research. And I'm sorry, you know, watching YouTube videos on the can with your mouth open is not research. But, you know, it's passed off as. And this is where, you know, this world of alternative facts comes in, that Trump and his ilk have brought into our politics. And this is what concerns me about this, because, you know, clearly you're the legal expert here. But as I was reading through the decision, did Roberts enumerate what an official act is, and did he lay out what it is and what it isn't?
There are core official acts which are set forth in the Constitution. But the thing that really got me is a throwaway line on page 20 that says the president has all the authority to discuss with the attorney general investigations and prosecutions and to direct them as the chief law enforcement officer in the country. So breaking that down into lay terms, that means the president has full authority to politicize and weaponize the Department of Justice. And the last time we saw that happening was back in the 1970s when a guy by the name of Richard Nixon directed his underlings to break into the DNC, tried to intimidate the FBI, use his powers to have the CIA undercut FBI investigations. and was using all of what would now be considered outside bounds of his presidential authorities and provide presumptive immunity. You could go out on a limb and say that the Supreme Court just legalized Watergate. And that's what we're looking at. Since that time, the president has dutifully remained independent of DOJ. DOJ does their own thing. They fill the president on what's happening, but he doesn't have a say. Now the president can direct the DOJ to prosecute his political opponents. He could have them start investigations into anybody and everything that he feels is appropriate. And if anybody refuses, he could fire them for refusing an illegal order or a directive to conduct an illegal investigation, and there would be no means to prosecute him for it.
Now, what's interesting is, as I'm hearing you say this, I'm hearing in my head all of my Red Hat friends who believe what you just said is already happening. They believe Biden sat down with Garland and Bragg in New York, and that they've devised this plot to go get Donald Trump, and that this decision is vindicating Donald, poor innocent victimized Donald Trump.
I mean, you can believe all you want if you listen to right wing talk radio, as we're on left wing talk radio. The evidence never matches the accusation. And the accusation is always a projection of what they're planning on doing. Joe Biden didn't run on a platform that subsisted of two blanks, retribution and revenge. And that's all I can tell that Donald Trump's planks are. That's the only thing he's running on at this point, without getting into the hellscape that Project 2025 will create.
Now you've opened up another can of worms, because, you know, now does this give him the ability to go and do all of those things that he said he was going to do, using Schedule F to fire all the federal workers and then make patronage great again by bringing in all these loyalists that are being vetted as we speak by the Heritage Foundation and others as under this Project 2025? This now makes all that legal, doesn't it?
Short answer, probably. I think the lower courts will be able to put speed bumps in the implementation of some of it. But as these trend up toward the Supreme Court, we have seen this Supreme Court side with him on the merits in every case before them. We have seen them side with the right-wing, crazy A Fifth Circuit on the merits in every case where it got to the merits on that. I had a question earlier today, is Amy Coney Barrett a moderating influence on the more right-wing judges? And I think Amy Coney Barrett is whip smart. She's a hell of a writer. And she has been making the right noises about moderating and narrowing, calling into question some of the doctrines that the far-right justices have been using. But until she starts siding with the more liberal justices on the merits of cases that have really significant negative impacts on the American populace, then that hope is illusory. So I hope she moderates. I hope she's a moderating influence, but she's not there yet.
No, because I've been saying for the last several years that, look, Republicans want to repeal the 20th century, and they're going to use the Supreme Court to do it. We're going to go back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. And this, along with the decision last Friday, seemed to be moving us in that direction rather quickly.
Are you trying to get me to have your audience fall asleep by talking about administrative law? Because I'll talk about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire all day long.
Yeah, so, by all means, this is a labor program. You know, these my audience are working people.
Okay.
They're not in the red hat, blue hat world. These are folks who get up every day, punch a clock, and want to know that they're going to come home at the end of the day and be safe and be alive at the end of the day. That's what my audience wants to know.
And I want that for them too. And the Supreme Court apparently doesn't, because two cases that they just issued, Loper Bright versus Relentless, repealed a 40-year-old Chevron doctrine, and Corner Post, which came down yesterday, opened up the entire Code of Federal Regulations to challenge. If it was created in 1948 or 2018, it doesn't matter, because everybody has a bite at the apple now. And those two cases combined really limit the ability of agencies like the National Labor Relations Board or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration from being able to put in place things against labor abuses. You want to raise minimum wage or the threshold to get overtime pay. You want to stop bad employers from wage theft. Good luck with that, because labor law relies on Chevron, and the Supreme Court just ended Chevron.
So we'll cut you off real quick. So, you know, on Tuesday, Joe Biden and the Biden administration announced the heat exposure rule to protect workers from, you know, basically dying because of heat exposure. What you're saying is that that's probably never going to make it to law because they're going to sue, and this court will, well, who knows what?
I mean, I'm going to venture that they're going to sue in the Northern District of Texas, where there are six Trump-appointed judges who will do anything that Leonard Leo and his ilk, who are, you know, payrolling these litigants, to do. So I would imagine that there will be a nationwide injunction, and then it'll go through the process. And to the extent that it gets to the court on the merits, you got best case scenario 5-4. And preventing that. And then you've got folks like I'm a Floridian, so I understand the concept of hot summers, playing football back in the late 90s, doing two-a-days in August. It ain't fun. And I wasn't working out on a rooftop, you know, rolling tar for 8 hours a day. DeSantis just wiped all that off the map. Yeah. They say they want democracy. They say they want local rule. But, well, why is it that when liberal municipalities or blue municipalities do things like create worker safety programs to make sure that people aren't dying of heat stroke, governors like DeSantis and Paxton rip those away from the localities where they're enforced?
Come on, Devin, you know those are job killers.
Yes, literally, they are killer jobs if you do it wrong.
That's the right turn of phrase. I say, you know, look, you know, they claim it's a, you know, job killing regulation. I said, what about the lack of regulation that actually kills people? So it seems to me, and, you know, help me here then, because, you know, and it seems like we're venturing back into not such a great era for working people. I've been saying for years, we're going to head back to the Lochner era, where if you're desperate enough and hungry enough to work for poverty wages and deplorable conditions, that's your liberty. It's your freedom.
You and I are simpatico, sir, because I say Lochner and people glaze over. Yes, 100% Lochner. That's they've said that's what they've wanted for decades.
So real quick, explain to people in your view what that means for the person working on that roof, the person driving the truck, that electrical worker working on the power lines. What does that mean for working people when you say they want to take us back to the Lochner era?
So you think corporations have power over you now? Wait until the Lochner era is reinvigorated, because back then the court almost always sided with corporate interests and rights. And they would routinely hold that the government does not have the authority to protect individuals over corporate abuses. That's it in a nutshell. That's the Lochner era. And here's the kicker, though. You may think, well, we have access to the courts because we can sue and we can do class actions. Over the course of the last decade, this conservative court has been creating stronger enforcement mechanisms for arbitration clauses, which a lot of people I've contracted for when they're employed, which means that you don't get to go to court. You get to go to an arbitration that you help pay for, that they get to select the arbitrator who is in their pocket, because if they rule against corporations, they don't get hired anymore and they don't get any more money. And there is no right of judicial review in those cases. You think, okay, well, you know, if they're abusing us as a franchise, we can act as a class. Well, also, the Supreme Court has been narrowing the ability of class actions to move forward. They are stripping the little guy of the rights to enforce their rights against powerful entities. That is what this Supreme Court is doing. That is what they have been doing. This is enacting the right-wing agenda. They've been doing it for decades. Leonard Leo started the Federalist Society in the 1980s. This is their end game: corporate supremacy over everyone, and damn near monarchical power in a unitary executive.
That's the scary part in all this. And I keep saying, you know, whether they're going after workers, consumers are going to be there, and citizens. Look, are you, Donald Trump said he loves clean air and clean water, but yet we're going to have now lawyers deciding whether we get that.
Yes. So I hate to be all doom and gloom.
Hit me.
Because there are kind of a couple of bright spots in all of this. If Congress has a willingness to side with the American people instead of the corporate interests, which means we're going to have to get Republicans on this as well. But the way that the Loper-Bright case that overturned Chevron was written, the way that the Corner Post case was written, is these are not constitutional rulings, which means Congress can act. Congress can codify Chevron in some capacity. Congress can institute a very simple fix to the statute of limitations that would close challenges to all of the Code of Federal Regulations except anything that's been finalized within the past 6 years, unless it's as applied. I'm not going to get into that.
No.
But Congress could act with some relatively simple fixes.
Congress could act. You had me at, there's some things we can do. And then you lost me at, Congress can act. Because we can't even seem to name a post office anymore, let alone do some of this stuff of which you speak. But I guess this is why November matters. This is why elections matter. We need to be throwing some of the people out who have been supporting this stuff and getting both sides of the aisle, people in there who are going to say, no, we don't want to go back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s. But Devin, I appreciate the thoughts, the expertise. This, I'm sure, is going to get worse before it gets better. And I'd love to have you back again to explain what's going on.
Happy to do it anytime. Thanks for having me.
Devin Ombre, Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy there at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I want to hear your thoughts. You concerned about where we're heading? You concerned that we're going back to the good old days? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1835. That was the day that textile workers walked off the job at 20 Mills in Paterson, New Jersey. But this was not a strike like we might picture one today, with burly men walking the picket line or women chanting as they carry picket signs. In Paterson, most of the strikers were children, ages 10 to 18. Many were young girls. Child labor was in high demand in the silk mills because of their small, nimble fingers. The children walked off the job because they wanted an 11-hour workday and a 6-day work week. They were tired of working 13 grueling hours a day, 7 days a week. Soon, their parents formed the Paterson Association for the Protection of the Working Class to support the strikers. There were no labor unions in Paterson back then. The company refused to negotiate. Women textile workers at other mills in the area also walked off the job. At its peak, 2,000 workers had walked out on strike. Finally, after 6 long weeks, the company agreed to a compromise. They settled on 5 12-hour days and 9 hours on Saturday. The children went back to work to a 69-hour work week. Strike leaders were blacklisted from the mills. This would not be the last time that child laborers took a stand on the job. In 1912, children workers were an important part of the famous Bread and Roses strike of Lawrence, Massachusetts textile workers. In 1933, children workers in Allentown, Pennsylvania sweatshops joined in a strike. Their participation led the governor's wife to join them on the picket line. The strikers there won an increase in wages and reduced hours. Children fought against their exploitation by taking to the picket lines.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Now, you know, look, with Devin got into the idea of the Lochner era, and we haven't talked a lot about that over the last year or so, but it's right now fully back on the table. The fact that they are destroying, they've destroyed the administrative state. It's coming. This idea that we now have no longer the unitary executive. We're going to have a king. I guess this is where this could go. And I've had people go, well, how's this going to matter to me? Why do I care? How's it going to affect my life? Because these cases, you know, they seem so abstract and so out there. Understand that we have in this country this kind of certainty. You know, I saw a small business group going, hey, you know, this this attack on the administrative state is going to kill small businesses because big business is just going to run right over us. The regulations that are put into place about fair competition, you know, all that stuff is now on the table to be overturned. We're in the Wild West moments now. Where do things go? And this is that transition moment. We are now going to see all of the bad ideas that conservatism has been talking about for years that we've been warning about. We're going to see a lot of this stuff, and we're going to have to live through it. And as I've said before, you know, if we're going to live in bad times, let them be now so that my kids don't have to suffer too much. But it's getting to be, this court isn't going anywhere for 30 years. I'll be gone by the time there's an opportunity to change how bad this court is. So it comes back to being cognizant of who we elect into the White House, who we put into halls of power, and then starting to think about what kind of a country do we want? Do we want to have safe drinking laws? Do we want to have clean air laws? Do we want to hold corporations accountable? Do we want to hold our president accountable when they're wrong? And there's a case, you know, making its way through the courts now where our billionaires, you know, Bezos, Musk, the folks at Trader Joe's, they're in the process of going, hey, Supreme Court, rule that National Labor Relations Act. Rule that unconstitutional. Throw labor relations in this country into chaos. Now, there are those of us who go, I don't know, that's a bad idea. Because maybe workers go, wait a second, there is no labor peace. Maybe we find militancy. Maybe we find our way back together. And this is where it's easy to have despair. It's easy to go, oh my God, the sky's falling. But it's also an opportunity for people to go, you know, wait a second, bridge too far. No, I don't want rivers burning. No, I don't want corporations to have absolute power. No, I don't want a president who can have someone shot on Fifth Avenue. No, I don't want a president who can crime at will and have no accountability other than maybe possibly an impeachment, which we saw during the Trump years, didn't happen. And this idea for the average everyday worker who's just going, look, I want to go to work. I want to take care of my family. I want to have some disposable income to do some nice things, a vacation every now and again, you know, some you know, decent clothes, decent place to live, food on the table. You know, a lot of people just want to lead a reasonable life. They just want to be happy. They don't want to get into the political wranglings. They don't want to have to worry about, you know, what the president is doing every moment of the day. They want to live their lives. And fortunately for a lot of people, they're able to do that. But understand what is happening right now is going to affect that. Once you start moving in a direction where government cannot enforce wage theft laws, where government can no longer ensure safe workplaces, where you can't propose a piece of a regulatory piece of enforcement that would protect workers from heat enforcement, from heat illnesses. That starts to break down. And, you know, we brought up the Lochner era. You know, that was an era in our country, 1905 to 1935, where our Supreme Court said government can make no law to infringe on the relationship between the employer and the employee. No minimum wage laws, no maximum hour laws, no safe working condition laws, nothing. Because it was all liberty of contract. You have the right, the liberty to make a bad deal. But the problem was, is everybody was living the bad deal. There wasn't that, I'll just go across the street. And what you had there is, you know, workers working 60, 70, 80 hours a week for poverty wages in desperate conditions to survive. And corporate America is saying, hey, that sounds pretty good to us. Sounds like it would be very profitable for us. We hear a lot of people complaining about inflation. Why didn't we hear for the last couple of decades, as wages have been declining and stagnant, why didn't we hear workers complaining at this volume Well, because that didn't benefit the work of the investor class. So where we got a lot of work to do, folks. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com. You're listening to Mad Radio. WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.